Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Actuator, Fractured Earth by James Wymore and Aidan James. Narrated by Roger Wayne. Chapter 1. Standing next to a colorful rock outcropping on a desert mountain, Red McLaren watched the crew study the surrounding geological formations. The merciless morning sun forced him to carry his black leather jacket, and one might presume his holstered pistol was intended for the workers around him. But as a key hunter, the weapon was strictly for protection. He'd felt something wasn't right since daybreak. He brushed his dark hair from his face, trying not to think about what he'd miss when Zenwin used the actuator. John told him not to let feelings get in the way of the job. So Red kept his uneasiness to himself, despite feeling he should be there with Zenwin. He never called her Lisa Gull anymore. She'd become so engrossed in her fantasy world that she never bothered with her real name. Red kept hoping she'd come out of this trance so the two of them could be together. There was no rush. He just wished she knew how she felt about him without the medieval wrappings. His job required him to stay grounded in reality, which meant her fantasy obsession kept them apart. The MP, Jackson, stepped out of the military van and joined Red. "What's so important about these rocks that half the untouched house had to come see them?" Red nodded indifferently, knowing the answer, but preferring not to give an impromptu training course on machine monks to a guard who should have known already, one who just didn't listen during training. Maybe they were just tired of being cooped up on base. "Aren't we all?" said Jackson. He pulled a Kleenex out from the driver's side door of the van and dusted the red sand from his polished black shoes. Red cracked a smile before returning his gaze to the machine monks, who were crushing rocks with hammers and analyzing samples. If anybody had told him a few years before that he'd be working alongside a military policeman, Red would have laughed. "I hope they wrap it up in time for a decent lunch." "While we're out, we should get some Chinese takeaway," the MP said, chuckling. "You can buy since you still owe me $20 after last week's football game," Red grinned, and walked over to the edge of the bluff. His gaze followed the long road they traveled, cutting through Joshua trees, sagebrush, and sand. The closest Chinese restaurant was a good 50 miles away. The base was closer, visible where it nestled between two distant peaks. The actuation would happen soon. As one of only two resident key hunters, Red felt he should be monitoring things from the control tower instead of babysitting what was happening here. Any time a large group of machine monks went off base, policy dictated they have a key hunter along as well as security. The next event would be coming soon. He sensed it. He hated being out here where he would miss the excitement of the earth-changing event today. It gave him such a rush. How effective could he possibly be out in the field when his mind remained focused on only the actuator site? Whether it was an addiction or just a Pavlovian response to the adrenaline of the change, he no longer cared. Red could see the actuator clearly in his imagination. The shiny aluminum cube sat on a round pad of concrete. Nearly as tall as a man, it had vents on the side like a supercomputer. Jutting out the front of the base stood a console. The keyholes appeared on top of it when they used the machine. When they finished the test, Red or John would insert the key and turn it, putting everything back the way it had been. The keys weren't shaped like normal keys. They were usually objects, like a watch or a magic wand with matching keyholes. Above the console, a control panel displayed various switches and readouts. One looked like an oscilloscope, another resembled radar. Nobody ever touched the controls. The actuator worked autonomously by reading the minds of the machine monks. It changed the world based on their thoughts, creating a shutdown key from their ideas. On top of the whole contraption, a large metal pole held three satellite dishes, which transmitted the signal. The pole rose to a round metal ball 15 feet up, like a lightning rod. Despite many electrical storms over the years and the machine sitting in the middle of a clearing with a 1 mile radius, it never suffered any damage from lightning. Red loved the adrenaline he felt in the moment when those satellite dishes glowed white. They paid him to monitor the actuations from the inside to keep the machine monks and others safe. but he still cherished that single second before lightning blasted out of the machine and sent a wave of change out across the testing field. One of the machine monks, a tall blonde in jeans and a tan blouse, tipped her sun hat back and walked over to him.
"Almost time?" she asked.
He and Veronica Turner had been friends for years. She preferred the nickname Glass. Red had never grown comfortable with the nickname some of the machine monks adopted, but it was the least strange aspect of his job.
"Yeah, I can feel it. Just like every other time," Red said. "Even from here."
"We all can."
She shielded her eyes from the sun, gazing toward the invisible oasis between two peaks.
"Everybody on the base can, too. It's become the center of our entire existence."
"Not for Empty House."
"Well, it's not supposed to be," she said. "Not for us either. But it is. The actuator defines our purpose and our perspective."
"That's a screwed-up way to go through life."
"Not really. Most people's lives center on their jobs. They think it's for the money to pay for homes and cars and food. But their actions revolve around the work they do."
"Not like us, though. They still go home to families and have barbecues on weekends."
Red's voice trailed off when a white light flashed over the horizon where the base lay. Glass gasped. A sphere of energy blasted toward them from between the twin mountains. Something like an event horizon of white energy. The blast traveled faster than sound, sparking as it swelled across the miles. There wasn't time to speak or run for cover. The transformative power of the pulsing arc would find them. In a matter of a few seconds, the crest flushed over and through them. Red's entire being shook from the familiar sensation as it overwhelmed his eyes with bright light and filled his ears with thunder. Placing his hands over his eyes and ears wouldn't help, since the sensation came from the electrical interactions with brain and nerves. The bitter mix of vinegar and caramel corn swelled his tongue, and the scent of acetone and vanilla embraced his nostrils. Every inch of skin prickled as his muscles tensed. The energy wave continued its magic, and the machine monks, including Glass, shook from what looked like intense euphoria. The bright light faded, and the rumble in his ears softened. Glass said,
"We shouldn't feel this. There's something..."
"Something's wrong," Red finished.
"What in the... what's going on?"
Jackson demanded in a new, grating voice. A low, guttural growl infected every word. Red jumped in dismay. The MP had turned into a green-skinned monster. Surely Jackson realized he had a slimy pig snout and beefy tusks sticking out of his mouth. How fitting. A wannabe cop was now monstrously pig-like. Having spent plenty of time on the run and thinking up derogatory terms for policemen, Red had to bite his lip. This was Zenwin's joke, turning all the guards into pigmen. She'd started doing it when she found out Red thought it was funny. Still riding on the actuator's high, it was hard for Red not to laugh. But fearing what would come next, he caught himself and focused on the emergency at hand. It was unprofessional of him to have laughed. The gravity of the situation soured the joke anyway. These changes were something Red had dealt with often. He'd been changed into everything imaginable, so he knew Jackson was experiencing something horrible. It took time for the actuator to arrange minds to accept the change. Sometimes seeing oneself as a monster could be more terrifying than the monster itself. Red still couldn't forget the time Mac had changed him into a giant blob. The worst to date was the hive mind, though. All those random thoughts buzzing around together made Red feel crazy and hopeless.
"How did the actuator reach us from so far away?"
Glass's arms shook and she tried to wrap them around her abdomen to get them to stop. The geological testing chemicals suddenly turned into glass vials of unknown alchemical liquids. The rest of the machine monks gasped and backed away from their animated tools. Red's heart pounded. None of these changes were out of the ordinary when Zenwin used the actuator to turn the testing grounds into a fantasy world. This far from the base, though, they shouldn't be seeing these changes. Why hadn't the actuation been contained this time?
"Look at my hands!"
Jackson, the new orc, marveled. He followed it with enthused grunts that grew louder as he saw his shiny shoes had become rough leather boots, sized to fit his far bigger feet.
"Calm down," Rhett said.
It was a struggle to keep his own fears from showing on his face as he reached out to steady the MP.
"It's probably just a glitch in the system. John's there, and we'll probably figure this out any moment. He'll know what to do."
"That's easy for you to say," Jackson graveled. "You don't look like a filthy pig."
"An orc." Red stepped closer and placed a tentative hand on the shoulder of Jackson's torn leather tunic.
"Obviously, this is Zenwin's work."
"That slut did this to me."
"Hey, she's not a slut."
Red hated what the soldiers on base said about Zenwin, but this wasn't the time to school an ignorant cop on a girl he knew quite well.
"It must be a problem with the dampeners. Just hold on there, and John will have the key back in the actuator in a few seconds. Then all of this will go away."
"He better, orc,"
the orc grunted. Jackson reached for his gun and found instead a heavy battle axe strapped to a thick belt.
"Where's my gun?"
He lifted the axe and gripped it in a fit of anger.
"Stand down, soldier," Red ordered.
Recognition came into Jackson's muddy green eyes, and the slob of a monster brought his heels together while straightening his hunched back.
"On this trip, I outrank you. Is that clear? I don't give a rat's ass if you're a candy-coated cookie man. You will help me get these monks back to base. You can sort out your personal issues then. Again, do I make myself clear?"
The pig man nodded, though he shook. His teeth were a gritted fence of rage. Glass retreated quietly toward the other cowering machine monks. The change was affecting Jackson's mind now. This was too long. John should have fixed it before it got this bad. Red took a deep breath. His first priority was to protect the monks. It was important for everybody's safety, to keep Jackson's mind focused and not let him slip into the role completely. He stared hard in Jackson's eyes with drill sergeant intensity.
"That's yes, sir, to you."
The orc snorted. He whipped the axe up to attack.
"I don't take orders from your kind."
Cursing, Red barely escaped the swiping blade. Shaking his head in disgust, he reached for his gun and was only slightly surprised that he pulled out a crossbow instead. The guard grunted as he spun around and leaped into the crowd of cowering machine monks. When he lifted the axe to slice through glass, Red pulled the trigger. The small arrow sunk deep in the monster's back. Blood poured from the wound where it nicked the heart. The beastly man's hairy green arms began to shake. He fell, coughing out his last bit of life as his axe clattered against the rocky ground. Glass had one hand over her mouth as tears streaked down her cheeks. Red rushed to her side, and she buried her head into his shoulder.
"Why would Jackson attack me?"
she cried.
"I thought we were friends."
"It's what the actuator made him. It wasn't his choice," Red said, patting her back.
Untouched house monks weren't used to the intensity of dedicated house actuations. They dealt with understanding the present world and all its intricacies. Glass may have watched a fantasy actuation from the outside, but this was her first time being in one.
"That's awful,"
said Cindy, another untouched monk. She pulled her pink knitted sweater tight as if she were cold, despite the sun's rays. Red nodded. He knew Jackson, too. Although not close friends, they'd talked at more than a few social events on the base where they all lived.
"Why'd you kill him?"
another monk, Owen, asked as his hands shook. His face was white and his eyes appeared dilated.
"Why didn't you just wound him?"
"It's my job to protect you all at all costs," Red said.
He knew if anything had happened to Glass, John would never forgive him. Still, bile rose in his throat and he almost choked on the words. Red had never killed anyone before.
"Jackson would have kept going. I've dealt with Zenwin's orcs many times. They aren't rational beings."
"The machine just sucked out his free will?" Glass asked. "I mean, we all knew it could, but..."
He realized now they should have cross-trained the machine monks from the different houses. These untouched house monks didn't understand how the dedicated house changes affected people. Before today, It had never been a problem. When this was over, he'd bring that up in the next meeting. Although, Commander Newell was going to be so pissed about this, he probably wouldn't get time. Right now, he just needed the rest of them to calm down. Red nodded.
Why hasn't John put the keys in and turned things back to normal yet?
Dedicated house actuations are intense. This is the worst that could have escaped the test area. All around us, as far as the change reached, people will be living in a real-life fantasy. A dangerous one. Red knelt by Jackson and tried to find a pulse in the fatty section that used to be a neck.
Will he be alive again when they fix it?
Owen asked. He had shaved his head to accommodate his bald spot, but wore a goatee beneath black-rimmed glasses.
He should shave the beard, too.
Such a strange time for that thought. It made Red suspect he might be in shock, too. No. Red stood up and took a deep breath.
He's dead. And I have to live with it.
Glass hugged him. It brought no comfort. He'd done his job, but he'd hate himself for it forever. Owen wouldn't calm down.
What do we do? Do we call the police?
No, Red said. Everybody in the van. I mean, carriage. The van was gone, and in its place sat a large white carriage with a team of 6 horses stamping in agitation. We need to head back right away. I'll send somebody to pick up Jackson's remains once we know what's going on.
We can't just leave him here, Glass said.
I'm not leaving him here forever. Let's get going.
No. I want to know what you know, Red. Why didn't the actuator turn us into monsters, too?
Owen waved his hands as he spoke. Red sighed and held his crossbow aimed at Owen's legs. If Owen didn't calm down, Red would have to subdue him physically. Instead of shooting a warning quarrel toward Owen's feet, he put the crossbow back into the holster. It depends on Zenwin's mental model. Red climbed onto the carriage. He was leaving with or without them. She probably sees machine monks as a separate classification of people than guards. It's all very complicated, and I just killed somebody. So can we stop with the 20 questions and get out of here? Owen reluctantly nodded, and the machine monks climbed into the carriage, perching on wooden benches instead of comfortable seats. Glass sat up on the driver's perch next to Red.
Thank you for saving me. I'm so sorry this happened.
Red bobbed his head.
Me too.
He levered off the brake and whipped the horses. The carriage turned around the green-skinned corpse. Jackson lay motionless, his blood sinking into the sand. Chapter 2 Red looked up at Glass's face. Even with her yelling, he couldn't hear well over the thunderous hooves of the horses. She held up one hand to keep her wind-whipped hair from hitting her in the face.
I just don't know why they haven't put everything back yet.
I don't know. Red urged the team to go faster, even though it already felt like the ruts and rocks of the dirt road might crack the wooden carriage wheels. It had been a regular road when they drove out this morning. Owen kept trying to yell up to the front of the cab. Red ignored him and shouted to Glass. There were supposed to be dozens of machine monks working the actuator today. All of Dedicated House, 1 empty house, and a couple from your house were all going to try and negotiate territory in the test zone.
Do you think it overloaded the machine somehow?
A gust of wind brought desert dirt up, and they both turned aside for a moment. No, Red said, wagging his head for emphasis. We've done multi-user tests before without any problems.
Seems like John would have recovered the reset keys by now.
Glass wiped a tear from her eye. Red didn't know if it was from the wind or seeing a man killed right in front of her minutes earlier. He felt worse for not crying himself. He just couldn't process it right now. He had to stay strong and get them all home safely. The cold wind felt warm compared to his heart. Not if the dampeners failed, Red said. The dedicated house monks create keys to shut down their own territories. Without a limit to the affected area, the keys could be scattered all over the world. His voice dropped as his jaw tightened. An unseen vice gripped his heart. They trained him to kill, of course. When he signed up for this job, it was a very real possibility. However, in all his training, nobody ever told him how awful it would feel. Each beat of his heart echoed in his ears, a reminder of the heart he'd pierced. Jackson didn't deserve to die because of an accident. And Red didn't deserve to be the one to kill him. He'd never killed anybody during his wild years. The irony of having to do it now that his life was respectable glared at him. He wanted to blame Zenwyn and her silly fantasy world for changing Jackson into an orc. It would be like blaming an owl for hunting mice. The base recruited Zenwyn for her obsession with fantasy, just as all the dedicated house monks had their favorite genre. She didn't know the dampeners would fail. Nobody did.
"It's not your fault,"
Glass said, putting one hand on Red's shoulder. "But I have to live with it."
"You saved my life," she said, rubbing his back. "Thank you."
He could hear the conflict in her as she forced the words. He recognized her struggle with survivor's guilt. She wondered whether her life was worth more than Jackson's.
"You're welcome,"
he nodded. When he found John, he knew his boss would tell him he did the right thing. Somehow knowing wasn't enough. He needed to hear it. He needed John's declaration of absolution. John was the head key hunter and Red's mentor. Red had no other parent or superior he respected or cared for. Though Carla Newell was the base commander, Red's loyalty always lay with John. Now, Red found himself questioning everything again. Why should I care what happened to a base I've been forced to work on? What's stopping me from just turning and leaving right now? After so many years working in strange bubbles of reality, he knew he could get by in almost any of them. "I don't know them anything." He pushed the guilt aside. He couldn't abandon these people. That was his past. He had a life now, and he had friends. Most of all, he couldn't leave Zenwyn. Glass asked,
"Do you think everybody else is okay?"
Red couldn't answer. They fell into silence as the base neared. The dampeners, once sophisticated speakers on top of tall posts positioned around the testing site, now looked like stone defensive towers. Red had never seen them transformed by an actuation before. Seeing them as towers now filled him with a sick sense of foreboding. A crenellated stone wall replaced the razor-topped chain-link fence that used to surround the 2-mile area where they conducted experiments. As the base, which attached to the testing ground on the far side, drew near, they saw the buildings had all been transformed into medieval architecture, both Gothic and fantastic. Where the road entered the facility, huge wooden gates in the stone perimeter hung shattered on iron hinges. Screams and crashes pierced the loud commotion of the carriage, getting louder as they approached. Red slowed the horses before entering the broken doors. Except for the occasional glimpse of somebody rushing across the street or slamming heavy shutters, they couldn't see what had everybody running. Red assumed orcs. When they finally brought the carriage to a halt in front of the main row of barracks, he jumped down. He recognized Marcus Beechin darting into a nearby alley and called out, "Mac!" The taller, stronger machine monk ducked behind a column without a word, poking his head out to check if anybody else saw him. Red went over and asked, "What's going on?" Mac glared up the street in both directions, then looked up at the sky. "It's not safe," he glanced back at the carriage. "Better get those guys off the street." Red signaled the rest of them to follow him into the small alley. He put his jacket back on despite the heat while the others worked their way in behind. "You can probably handle an orc." "Aren't monsters kind of your thing?" Red asked. "Of course," Max said. He had on a gray muscle shirt, which prominently displayed the skull tattoo on his shoulder. "The guards out in the field all turned into orcs. They've been marauding through the base, killing anybody they find."
"Won't they find us when they see the carriage?" Glass asked.
"Good point." Red veered between two buildings. When they reached the next road, he checked both directions before crossing to the recreation center, which now looked like a medieval cathedral. "Everybody out!" Red jumped down and walked back across the road. Everybody followed. He pulled back his crossbow and loaded a bolt. One shot wouldn't be enough if a whole group of orcs found them. "It gets worse," Max said.
Worse than a band of orcs killing everybody they find?
Cindy pushed her glasses up on her nose.
Commander Newell is a crash sounded outside.
Red rushed the door in time to see a flamethrower ignite the horses and carriage in a single, terrible conflagration. Then massive reptilian claws swooped through the fire and scattered the carriage into flying pieces of burning wood. The horses burned where they landed, dying in a ball of smoke and ash. Red jumped back to avoid a fiery wheel as it bounced up the steps and into the hall where the machine monks now cowered. When he looked back, he finished Mac's sentence.
Dragon.
Gigantic wings lifted the mighty titan, covered with coppery scales and bigger than a whale, into the air. Her serpentine tail traced the graceful flight.
I think most of the orcs died fighting that thing, Max said. What happened out there?
Red pointed toward the test area.
Where's John?
Chaos, Max said with raised eyebrows.
Everything seemed normal except they put in more machine monks for this test, which we all knew from the long briefing. All systems checked out, so they started the actuator. We all put in our ideas and the machine started churning. But instead of giving us each a slice, like before, the machine transformed everything into this fantasy. John ran off and the rest of us stood around like idiots because the conversation just kept going on. The actuator kept asking for more and more. We all just kept feeding it idea after idea. At least I did.
Suddenly they all jerked to the side when a guttural growl echoed toward them, followed by the sound of rapidly squelched screams. Everybody else froze, but Max smiled.
Anyway, when it finally stopped, the actuator had 25 keyholes. I've never seen it with so many, of every shape and size, covering the console. All those keyholes, but Zenwin's was the only reality change we could see. The machine was spitting white lightning. I thought it might explode, but it didn't stop. It just kept blasting that white energy in every direction. It was still going when I left, too.
Another distant crash made the machine monks cringe.
Did John find the keys? Glass asked.
I don't know if he found anybody else's. I know my key wasn't there. The orcs came over the wall and started chopping up monks. We all scattered. Only the fast escaped. They probably killed more than half. I wanted to fight one. But I didn't have any weapons, and they were hacking people into bloody messes.
Mac's face registered a lopsided smile.
It was kind of cool. Anyway, we all ran across the test zone. Just before we got out, the dragon came down, burning and eating orcs like a buffet. Once we cleared the gate, we spread out. Several monks ran out into the desert through a hole in the wall. They probably booked it straight for their own closest territories. Once they got outside the base, the dragon just let them go. I decided to take my chances here. That desert is way too big to make it safely across on foot. Besides, I don't like the sun.
I'll go find John. Red turned away before wagging his head. Could Mac really think it was cool to watch people being slaughtered?
Where?
Glass asked. He'll be at the office sooner or later. You all stay here and keep inside. Once I have John and anybody else I can find, we'll meet back here, said Red.
There's a cellar where the bomb shelter used to be, Mac offered. It might have some supplies. I didn't go down there yet because it was locked.
I'll look for the key to it. Red knew where the key should be. He just didn't know if it and the keyhole would match now. Those kinds of details were always a little fuzzy when they tested the actuator if they didn't prepare the machine monk for it on purpose.
It's too dangerous, Cindy said, holding on to Glass for support. We should all stay here.
Until what? Red asked. The government sends help?
Yes.
The whole world looks like this. Red kept his tone soft, trying not to be too harsh.
Not exactly, Max said. I know somewhere out there are places I made.
You know that how? Mac was a machine monk of the dedicated house. His specialty was horror. With how bad Zenwin's supposedly innocent fantasy world had turned out, he didn't even want to think what it would be like if Mac's obsessions were unleashed on the world.
You can feel when the great conversation happens. The actuator gets in your head and reads out your thoughts and feelings. You can feel it asking you questions, even sense the word sometimes. It probes your ideas until it understands your will. Then it draws all of that out and turns it into electric...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?